Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go. Cause when I look to the sky, something tells me you're here with me. And you make everything.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by A Lawyer Presents the Evidence for the Afterlife, a book by Victor and Wendy Zammit, and that can be found at www.victorzammit.com. Tonight's guest is Dr. Stephen E. Browdy, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. And how are you tonight, Bob?
I'm doing well, and I wanted to mention that our afterlife exploration retreat is coming up in, what is it now, 2 weeks?
July 26th.
Yeah, for those that were thinking about coming, I know there's one room.
It's
left.
One room in the inn left.
But there's room at the retreat. You can stay off-site.
There are nearby hotels
that
have great rates. And we certainly can help out anybody who still wants to come, but they won't be able to get a room on site.
Right. Well,
we have one room, and we might be able to squeeze in a couple of others. It depends on if you're a double, a triple, a quad.
Right, so you can check that out on the website. There's a link that says, what does it say? Grief Retreat, Afterlife Exploration Retreat.
The first on the first page says Grief Retreat.
Okay. We, speaking of the website, what we've taken to do lately is we put up a survey question. Now, in the past, you know, since we have, you know, we're in touch on a regular basis with about 8,000 people, it gives us a good base to do these more extensive surveys. And they're quite telling, and people find them interesting to take part in them and then to watch for the results. But what we do now is now once a month we're putting up a question, and that has four or five multiple choice question, and so it's a one question survey, and we get quite a large response from it. You know, sometimes 1,000 people, sometimes. In this one, we just closed it out, and we had about
just under 600.
600,
people.
And we called it the convincing evidence poll, and the question was, what do you think is the most convincing evidence of life after death? I don't know about if you were surprised at the results or not. I was just a little bit surprised. It fell in line with what I thought. But I thought what was interesting, here are the choices for most convincing evidence of an afterlife. Scientific evidence, personal experience, just spiritual understanding, religious faith, or there is no convincing evidence. And bringing up the rear was, there is no convincing evidence. We had 5%, you know, mention that. I thought that might, you know, even be higher, but I'm not surprised.
Well, I thought that would have been lower.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah. Because I kind of feel like we're preaching to the choir here, but I guess when it's on our load page and somebody goes to our site just out of curiosity, they could vote.
Right.
It's not restricted to only members.
No. And, you know, there are plenty of people that go on the site because they're interested in some phenomena, but they don't know much about it. They want to learn more, and maybe they're on the fence.
Hey, for all we know, the amazing Randy kept going on and voting.
Well, what was a little surprising was that the overwhelming majority out of the five choices was personal experience that trumped all. 55% of the respondees said that it was personal experience that offers the most convincing evidence of an afterlife. The surprise there to me was that I thought that we'd have about equal with personal experience and spiritual understanding, you know, more in the an inner knowing or in a general terms. They can, people that are sometimes very spiritual and have this, maybe they get engaged in meditation and so forth, and or yoga, and they have this inner knowing, and to them, you know, that's evidence. And it still was a strong showing. It was 19% in spiritual understanding, but not anywhere near personal experience.
Well, also consider this. Somebody who is a regular meditator and has a spiritual understanding and then has a personal experience moves from one category to the next.
That's true, and you can only pick one.
Right.
Scientific evidence, people said 12%. Thought that was a little low. But it's telling, you know, how convincing is the scientific evidence in getting one to convince one that there's an afterlife? I guess for a lot of people, it doesn't do it. I mean, they read about the research, but what were you going to say?
I was going to say, reading about, you got to remember the educational background in science for the average person doesn't go past what you learned in high school chemistry lab when you put, you know, iodine on a piece of white bread to see if there was sugar in it, you know, or whatever that experiment was. So that's the kind of evidence they're looking for. They're looking for something that, oh, let me watch a YouTube that shows me the experiment that they do that concludes that there's an afterlife.
Yeah, and
they don't want to read a long journal report that includes data and that the data supports that there's an afterlife. They want an instantaneous experiment.
Yeah, well, we live in a quick fix society, you know, and we want instant gratification, and spiritual enlightenment falls into that same category. We want our enlightenment; we want it now.
Yeah.
but in terms of also have to factor in, you know, 12% said scientific evidence, but how many people were not aware of the scientific evidence?
Well, that was my point.
Yes. Yeah, so
they're not looking for journals. They're looking for a YouTube that shows an experiment.
Not only journals. There are people that, for instance, maybe they come to the site because they want to find out more about mediums, not knowing that there's, you know, 200 years of scientific research involving all sorts of phenomena. So somebody may not even be aware of near-death experience or of deathbed visions or of physical mediumship or of reincarnation, from a scientific point of view.
Right, and that's very true, because I could tell you that we get telephone calls and emails in the office suggesting that we conduct or support, you know, an experiment. They go on to describe an experiment that was done 100 years ago. You know, they're not out there reading anything that's available.
Right. Now, well, for the 55% that checked off personal experience, do you think that these are all people who have had personal experiences, or they're just answering it as personal experience would be the most convincing? So maybe not
right.
55% had a personal experience, but they know that if they see their loved one walk across the room, that's pretty damn convincing.
Right. Well, that's the old answer to the question, do you believe in God? Well, when I have lunch with him, I will.
Right. and then, the 8% of the people checked off that religious faith provided the most convincing evidence. And that's, you know, I mean, it's sort of a contradiction in terms, I guess. You know,
faith
is not the same as evidence. Faith is belief without evidence, isn't it?
Believe what I tell you, period.
Right.
That's it.
Believe because I tell you it's so.
And that's what religion is.
Yeah.
Here it is. Don't question it because it came from our God. And believe it on blind faith. That's what it is, religious faith. Don't question it. Just believe what I tell you.
Yeah. So we're going to continue to put up these little polls. We'll try to do one every month. We've got a good one working for, we're going to put up probably in the next few days or next week, and we look forward and appreciate, you know, your participation in those. So we're going to go to a break. We have a wonderful guest tonight, Dr. Browdy, and when we come back, we're going to hear a whole lot more about things that we don't necessarily see with our five senses. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
Forever Family Foundation is hosting another Afterlife Exploration Retreat Weekend from Friday, July 26th to Sunday, July 28th at the beautiful Guest House in Chester, Connecticut. The program, Transforming Grief, Connections and Healing Between Two Worlds, includes expert facilitators and certified mediums, and features spirit communication, grief recovery techniques, meditation techniques, altered states of consciousness methods, psychic development exercises, and much more. Visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call 631-425-7707 for more details.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Don't miss Forever Family Foundation's 7th Annual Conference Weekend, November 9th and 10th, this year in warm and sunny San Diego, California. In Search of the Afterlife, Experiencing, Communicating, Connecting to Another World is designed for general audiences interested in learning about evidence of an afterlife. Attendees will be treated to cutting-edge presentations of evidence that we survive our physical deaths, as well as demonstrations of spirit communication by certified mediums. Add on the optional Friday night fundraiser dinner featuring medium Kim Russo, host of The Haunting Of TV show, and stay an extra day for Media Monday. For more information, visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Our guest tonight is Dr. Stephen Browdy. Our sponsor is A Lawyer Presents the Evidence for the Afterlife, a book by Victor and Wendy Zammit, and that could be found on www.victorzammit.com. Bob?
And on this lucky day of 7/11, we're honored to have an esteemed guest, Dr. Stephen Browdy. He's Emeritus Professor of Philosophy and former chair of the department at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. He's editor-in-chief of the Journal of Scientific Exploration. He's past president of the Parapsychological Association, and he's the recipient of several grants and fellowships. He's published more than 60 philosophical essays. There may be more, but at least that's the last count that I had. He's written 5 books, ESP and Psychokinesis, A Philosophical Examination, The Limits of Influence, Psychokinesis and the Philosophy of Science, First Person Plural, Multiple Personality and the Philosophy of Mind, one of my favorites, Immortal Remains, The Evidence for Life After Death, and his most recent book is The Gold Leaf Lady and Other Parapsychological Investigations, in which he describes many things, including his own encounters with the paranormal. Dr. Browdy is also a professional pianist and a composer. He's also a prize-winning stereo photographer. And I should mention that he also, most importantly, sits on the Scientific Advisory Board of Forever Family Foundation. You can learn a lot more about Dr. Browdy on his whimsical and informative website, Jazz Philosopher. That's jazz, just the way it sounds, philosopher.com. which will link you to his more academic website where you can read about publications and a lot of the other work. Welcome, Dr. Browdy.
Thank you. It's good to be here, and it's always a pleasure to connect with you and Fran.
Well, thank you. So I guess what we should get started is, have you adjusted yet to retirement from your academic duties and your duties as a professor in a teaching setting?
I've never been so busy, actually.
I've
retired from teaching and administration, and I have
right.
to say I miss aspects of the teaching, especially the uncritical admiration and abject servility of my students. But that's hard to do without. But I'm adjusting very nicely to retirement. It's pretty great.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I know you're involved in a lot of things, and we'll talk about some of those things a little bit later. One of the things to get started, you know, there's so much evidence, lab evidence involving, you know, ESP and attention, presentiment, and I have to admit, you know, when I first started getting interested in these things and I was doing my own research and I was reading about some of the lab evidence and then some of the books by Dean Radin, and you read about data with odds against chance of over 1 billion to 1, and I said to myself, damn, this has to convince mainstream science. I mean, how could they not buy into this? You know, I mean, it's got to change worldview. You know, and all of a sudden, I realized that hasn't happened to any extent at all. So, I mean, why hasn't it happened? Why is this lab evidence not convincing?
You know, interestingly enough, it hasn't even convinced all parapsychologists who do the work. I'm part of a listserv of parapsychological insiders, and they debate amongst themselves just how significant the significant results are and so on. And I think part of it has to do with the nature of quantitative evidence. There are endless sorts of disputes one can have about what the proper measures of significance are and whether we've reached them, and because parapsychological experiments don't replicate all that easily, there are also endless debates about why that is. Is it an experimenter effect? Is there something just inherently elusive about the phenomena? What should we be even trying to do? Should we be working with unselected subjects, or should we be going after superstars, which the latter is my view? And I think all of this plays into the fact that the quantitative evidence just is not particularly inherently convincing, no matter what some people say and no matter how scrupulously and honestly they do the work.
So it's not so much that there's it's poor scientific design. Some of it, the protocol is solid. It's just the fact that the nature of like you say, who's to say in an intention experiment, what role the experimenter or outside sources play, so we can never be sure. I guess that's what you're...
Well, that is a part of the problem of the experimental design, because, don't get me wrong, a lot of the designs are incredibly clever, and I admire them greatly, and there's some really solid and very interesting work that's been done. But there are some problems that I see no solution to just as a matter of principle, and one of them is called the source of psi problem, and that is how one actually can tell who's responsible for what and when the person is responsible for it. And if, as some people want to claim, we can allow backwards causation or retrocausation into the picture, then it gets even more complicated. Was the effect caused by something after the effect or simultaneous with it or before it? In a PK experiment, in a psychokinesis experiment, for example, there's no way in principle to know who's influencing the target or whether more than one person is influencing the target. You can't, there's not, we don't have a PK meter to go around and see where the influence is coming from. There's no way to tell.
Yeah. When we talk about, you know, survival and mediumship and things of that nature, I mean, a lot of, I understand how a great many people fear, they fear death in and of itself, but then they also fear any attempt to communicate with the dead because of, for many different reasons. But why do, are people fearful of mind-to-mind communication of the living? Why is telepathy scary to some people?
I think one reason it's scary is that it suggests that our most intimate or private thoughts may not be so private after all. So part of it has to do with the loss of, or the at least feared loss of privacy. And another component might be that if mind-to-mind interaction is possible, it may not just be communication, it might be influence. So to what extent can we be manipulated telepathically?
Yeah, I mean, we see so much like an intention experiments and healing and a power of prayer, but we don't think so much about the reverse, you know, of how all of these malevolent thoughts are affecting our universe. So I guess
I hate to be an advocate for the dark side, but you can't ignore it. I mean, I don't know anything that can be used exclusively for the good. And maybe you remember an old Twilight Zone episode about a man who flipped a coin and it landed on its edge. And so long as the coin remained on its edge, he found he could hear, as it were, what everybody around him was thinking. And it made his life a living hell. I mean, he was hearing things he rather would not hear at all.
Right. Well, a lot of people use that as an explanation of how our brain acts as a filter. You know, if we didn't have this filter, we'd be bombarded with information we couldn't handle.
Right.
I when we talk about survival, I know that you've mentioned that when it comes to survival evidence, you know, there are some things are stronger than others. You know, I mean, for instance, physical mediumship, one can make some strong evidential case. But what about some other things like near-death experiences? I take it, do you find near-death experience as evidential as, let's say, some of the physical mediumship cases and reincarnation cases?
Well, I don't find the near-death experience cases very evidential when it, as far as survival of bodily death is concerned. I mean, I think there's certainly a lot of ESP going on in some of them where the patients, while clinically dead, are able to gather information about things going on around them. But part of the problem is that, you know, a lot of people think that it's possible to establish in some sort of conventionally scientific way that at least some people or their personalities or some component of their personalities survive the death and dissolution of their bodies. And I don't think it's a very easy case to make scientifically. I think the people who claim this don't really understand some basic issues in scientific explanation and how we compare hypotheses and rate evidentiality and so on. That isn't to say there can't be compelling evidence for life after death. And I understand the emotional tug of the near-death cases. The evidentiality of the physical mediumship cases, although I think what we have there is really good evidence in many of those cases for psychokinesis among the living, I think usually the physical mediumship cases are very poor cases for establishing survival of bodily death because they don't usually provide any significant verifiable information, just lots of really groovy phenomena.
Yeah, you've and I know that throughout your career you've chosen to research these extraordinary, you know, cases, you know, versus
time in a lab, and you know, the gold leaf lady being one of them. And I know that you did extensive research with Ted Serios and spirit photography and photography. Recently, you've been working on some research with a physical medium. I mean, is that in that same category yet? I mean, of an extraordinary case?
I think it's great. And there are a lot of practicing physical mediums out there right now. There's only one who's allowing any kind of reasonable controls, and that is the medium Kai of the Felix Experimental Group based in Hanau, Germany. And I've been working with Kai now for a little over 3 years, or about 3 years. And Kai is getting better and better about allowing really invasive sorts of controls, including strip searches. And most recently, an investigation I conducted in Austria, which I'll be happy to give you some details about, where I had complete control over the environment in which the seances were conducted. I'll be speaking about this, I probably should mention, at the November conference.
That's our Forever Family conference in San Diego in November. Thanks for mentioning that. for people that are unfamiliar with physical mediumship, as you alluded to, there are various phenomena that take place. Past cases are levitations, spirit voices, apports, and probably the most
materializations. Yes, right.
Yeah, and I think the most difficult concept for a lot of people to get their head wrapped around is this concept of ectoplasm. So can you, did you witness ectoplasm? And maybe you could first start out by saying what ectoplasm is.
It's not as easy as you might think, but it's a kind of general term for stuff that seems to be extruded from a medium during a mediumistic seance. It's not clear whether there's just one kind of thing which has various stages of development. Some people have suggested that ectoplasm might begin as a kind of misty, undifferentiated stuff and then coalesce into something increasingly solid and more lifelike so that it may pass through various stages. But traditionally, ectoplasm has covered things like material oozing from a medium's mouth or from various other of the medium's orifices, or stuff just suddenly appearing on a medium's body, which could look like a paper cutout, which, of course, immediately raises suspicions. But sometimes it might be thought to be an invisible substance that nevertheless can interfere with an infrared beam, as in the case of Rudy Schneider. So it's stuff that seems to be extruded in various forms from a medium's organism and then eventually gets reabsorbed back into the medium's body.
Mm. And we know these scientific controls are of the utmost importance because in history there's quite a number of cases and quite a lot of fraud that was going on.
Of course.
But have you seen a levitation?
Oh, yes, and I've video recorded levitation in infrared and in very dim red light. In our last seances with the Felix Group, we got a very good video document of a full table levitation. I won't be able to show the actual video in November because it's the property of my co-investigator. He's a documentary filmmaker, Robert Narholz, somebody you should have on the show, by the way.
Yeah.
He's producing two documentaries right now. One is on Eileen Garrett and the Parapsychology Foundation, and the other is a film called Finding PK, which is all about macro PK. And naturally, Robert would like the video of the table levitation and some other things to be shown first in public when his video is presented, when his film is presented. But what I can do in November is to show slides taken from the video, which will convey quite a lot of what was going on.
Yeah, well, that'll be interesting. So I assume that you've ruled out fraud. if you ruled out...
Should I tell you why?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, let me tell you about the controls that we had in Austria.
Okay.
Actually, if you don't mind, let me just back up for a second, because my first experience with the Felix Group was back in the spring of 2010, and I was investigating them with Peter Mulasch from Vienna, and we saw all sorts of really interesting things under very casual controls, including a table levitation and lots of things flying around the room and darkness and so on, and various kinds of interesting phenomena happening at a distance from the medium, as far as we could tell. We thought it was good enough to merit a closer examination. So I went back to Hanau, Germany, with Robert Narholz 2 years later, and we tightened the conditions considerably, including a strip search of the medium, careful examination of the seance room, and so on. And under those conditions, not only did we get some table levitations, one of which I recorded in infrared, but I saw some really cool ectoplasmic stuff. I saw large quantities of stuff being pulled from the medium Kai's mouth. It landed in a heap on the floor. I watched the mass of stuff. I was about 3 feet away. I watched the mass of stuff breathing, as it were, in and out, sort of moving from within. And I saw it sprout an arm with a hand on top, which sort of moved back and forth like the head of a cobra. It's too bad you can't see the very helpful hand gestures I'm making here.
You're painting a very good picture.
Good.
It's a good thing that I know.
And eventually, Kai was covered with a kind of netting or cocoon of this stuff, which then got reabsorbed back into his body. Now, all of that was great, and the conditions of observation were, I think, pretty clean. But one of the problems was that this was still in the basement of Kai's parents' house. So you could imagine a critical observer saying, well, yes, even though, Browdy, you think you've examined the place very carefully, it wasn't fully under your control, it wasn't your place. So this past May, Robert and I used his private farmhouse in the hills of Austria outside Salzburg, and we cleaned the house ahead of time. There was a large room, a bare room, that could be used as an extra bedroom, which we cleaned of all furniture except a seance table and some chairs. And the room was padlocked both inside and out. The windows were locked, double locked from the inside, so nobody could get in. I had the key to the room, and nobody knew where I kept the key. So there was no access to the room when I wasn't monitoring it. I conducted another very careful strip search of the medium, not a full cavity search, mind you. I lack the skills for that and the taste for it, now that I think of it.
Right. We'll forgive you for that.
Thank you. But I think we can rule out any concerns about not having conducted a full cavity search for reasons I'll be happy to explain. So once I did a physical search of the medium, and checked the fresh clothes that we provided for him. I checked his shoes. I checked his socks. I looked in his underwear. I followed him to the seance room. He kept his arms raised so I could make sure that as we went to the seance room that he wasn't grabbing something en route. I sat him in the cabinet, the little curtained-off area, which, of course, we examined very carefully and videotaped the whole process. Then before we allowed any of the sitters into the room, we patted them all down. And under those conditions, still, we got this massive ectoplasm coming out of the medium's mouth, landing in a lump on the floor. At one point, the ectoplasm was glowing bright green. Kai brought it within 2 inches of my face. I could see that I could tell that it had no odor, which I think rules out both the regurgitation hypothesis and the supposition that he might have somehow concealed something in another orifice. And besides, there was no discoloration. Kai had eaten shortly before the seance, so I think we can rule out that he had... I think that there was no need for a full cavity search under those conditions.
Right. Well, I mean, regurgitation, I don't know how that's a plausible explanation. Anyways, it's like on a yo-yo. You could regurgitate and have it hover by your face and then pull it back. It doesn't sound quite plausible.
Well, I don't think it is either, but that's one of the standard skeptical maneuvers, so I mean, it has to be addressed.
Right. So
you've witnessed the ectoplasm. I mean, you've witnessed levitations, and I would imagine, you know, some other things. Have you reached any hypothesis, whether it's a result of PK from the living or spirit involvement or perhaps a combination of both?
There's no way really to know. I mean, there's nothing really evidential about the communications, or the ostensible communications. Kai appears to be possessed by the spirit of the deceased German parapsychologist Hans Bender. And allegedly the phenomena are produced with the help of Hans and a group of additional communicators on the other side he calls the chemists. But there's no way to know. And I think Kai himself is not settled in his own mind about it. Kai knows both the primary and secondary literature on physical mediumship, and he knows that it might just be psychokinesis on his part. Mm. And there's no way really to know, and I think there's no way we'll ever know for sure.
Yeah.
But what I think the payoff of this is that if we can document the phenomena really well, it's going to be that much more difficult not only for your usual parapsychological skeptics to say the phenomena can't occur and to just write it off very glibly, but it will also, I think, put an end to a lot of parapsychological theorizing, which tries to explain everything in terms of simplistic physical explanations, including quantum entanglement and so on. I mean, the usual physicist's approach to explaining parapsychological phenomena flounder dramatically when it comes to these dramatic physical phenomena.
Mm. Well, also, in a lot of past cases that seem extraordinary, there was quite a bit of evidential information, you know, purportedly coming from spirit passed through the medium in addition to the physical phenomena.
So that, oh, yes.
You know, yeah, so,
yes, that's right.
Yeah.
So that's the realm of mental mediumship, and that poses its own challenges. And one of them, the one I find most difficult to resolve, is whether we're dealing with real after-death communications or whether we're dealing with refined psychic functioning among the living that just looks like after-death communications.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to go to a break. I was just going to mention we're talking with Dr. Stephen Browdy. His website is jazzphilosopher.com. And stay with us. We'll be back in a few.
Forever Family Foundation is hosting another Afterlife Exploration Retreat weekend from Friday, July 26th to Sunday, July 28th at the beautiful Guest House in Chester, Connecticut. The program, Transforming Grief, Connections and Healing Between Two Worlds, includes expert facilitators and certified mediums and features spirit communication, grief recovery techniques, meditation techniques, altered states of consciousness methods, psychic development exercises, and much more. Visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call 631-425-7707 for more details.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Don't miss Forever Family Foundation's 7th Annual Conference Weekend, November 9th and 10th, this year in warm and sunny San Diego, California. In Search of the Afterlife, Experiencing, Communicating, Connecting to Another World, is designed for general audiences interested in learning about evidence of an afterlife. Attendees will be treated to cutting-edge presentations of evidence that we survive our physical deaths, as well as demonstrations of spirit communication by certified mediums. Add on the optional Friday night fundraiser dinner featuring medium Kim Russo, host of The Haunting of TV show, and stay an extra day for Media Monday.
For more information, visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707.
After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world, but for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential, and research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Stephen Browdy. This show is sponsored by A Lawyer Presents the Evidence for the Afterlife, a book by Victor and Wendy Zammit, and that can be found at www.victorzammit.com. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. There are three ways to show us you like Signs of Life Radio. One, go to the Signs of Life Radio page on Facebook and like us. Two, use the donate button on any of our weekly email show reminders to support programming. There's also a space to add a comment on what you love and what you don't like so much about the show. And three, remember us when you shop. Yes, when you shop, you can support the work of our 100% volunteer not-for-profit organization without spending any additional money at all. First, you'll need a credit card to shop online. So if you don't already have one or are in need of another, go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that's taken out, and each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Second, if your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first, use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find what you are looking for in their more than 1,300 online stores like Nordstrom's, Priceline, QuickBook, Radio Shack, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. And if you want some special time for yourself where you could spend a weekend with a small group of certified mediums, workshop facilitators, and like-minded people, all in a private and peaceful setting with fabulous food, well, time is running out. Make your reservation today. Bring your friends, share a room, and save some money at our Grief Transformation Weekend, July 26th to 28th, at the Guest House in Chester, Connecticut. It's easy to get to by train, plane, or automobile. Learn from the best on how to maintain your relationships with those who have crossed to the other side. With Garrett Jackson, Paul Alexander, Dr. Betty Kovach, Doreen Malloy, Rebecca Ann Lo Cicero, Laura Lynn Jackson, and our Healing Reiki team of volunteers, Donna Mello and Robin Murray. Our seventh annual conference will be held this year in beautiful and warm San Diego, California, at the DoubleTree by Hilton Golf Resort, November 9th and 10th. Mark the dates, as this will be the best one ever. The big member-only discount ends on July 31st, so make your plans now for the Friday night banquet featuring Kim Russo, star of the hit TV series The Haunting of, as our keynote presenter, bringing through communication from the other side. Then the conference begins early Saturday morning through Sunday evening, including featured presentations by Tom and Lisa Butler of the Association Transcommunication, Dr. Jeffrey Tarrant, researching the brain changes in mediums during communication. Research medium Janet Mayer. Dr. Stephen E. Browdy, tonight's Signs of Life radio guest. Dr. Evan Alexander and Lloyd Auerbach with spirit communication demonstrations from certified mediums Laura Lynn Jackson and Angelina Diana. And a special add-on this year, we bring you Medium Monday. So check the website for registration information now. Our Holidays Past raffle is in full swing, and you might want to get in while the number assignments are low, since a computer program pulls the winners by assigned numbers. The mediums in this raffle are Dave Campbell, Eliza Ray, Nancy Marlowe, Tracy Lee Nash, and Catherine Nadal. It's $5 a chance. Back to you, Bob.
And thanks to Dr. Browdy for hanging in there through our extensive announcement. We were talking about the physical mediumship when we left, and you know, when it comes to, we also touched on mental mediumship, and right now, I think there's, I would term it as an explosion, and the mediumship, mental mediumship has become like a cottage industry, and I have my own thoughts about why, you know, that's happening, and we do our best to try to monitor that situation. But these extraordinary physical mediums, you know, like Kai and several others, why are there so few of them? Do you have any ideas of that? I mean, with all these mental mediums, how come nobody else can do what Kai and several others can do?
Well, there are a couple of things. First of all, I think there's always been a kind of almost puritanical or Victorian prejudice against what used to be termed the lower phenomena of spiritualism, the physical phenomena. You don't find the same sort of imbalance in undeveloped or less developed countries. It's mostly in industrialized cultures. And I think it's, to some extent, a holdover from at least the Victorian era. So
yeah,
that, the British researchers in particular always had a problem with investigating mediums who had stuff oozing from various of their intimate orifices. It wasn't so big a deal for researchers in France and Germany. They were much looser about all this. And they would do full cavity searches, but the British wouldn't touch it. So that's part of the problem. The other problem is that because so many of these phenomena were conducted in darkness and so many frauds were perpetrated, that the very business of physical mediumship became tainted. And then there's another issue, too, and that's the fear of PK. And I know I've spoken about this to you before, but there's something really deeply scary and more conspicuously scary, perhaps, about psychokinesis than about ESP. And that is, if I can move, let's say, a pencil, a millimeter, just by thinking about it, it's a very small step conceptually from doing that to making somebody drop dead by thought alone. And if I can do that, then we have to take seriously, if there's any psychokinesis at all, that means we have to take seriously a kind of magical worldview that most of us associate, usually condescendingly, only with so-called primitive cultures. It's a worldview according to which thoughts can have various kinds of lethal consequences or other sorts of unsavory consequences, and in which we might have to take responsibility for a whole bunch of things that most of us would just as soon be bystanders for. So if I have a nasty thought about somebody and that person has an accident, I mean, the implications of physical mediumship or any psychokinesis would be that I might have had something to do with that. And that's something that I think makes a lot of people profoundly uncomfortable.
Yeah, and then when we talk about the afterlife, if we go by these channel reports by mediums that went into trance, you know, on the flip side of that, I mean, they talk about how, you know, how your actions in the physical affect your existence in other realms. So, you know, it's a motivation for people to have good thoughts and do good deeds, you know, to have an easier transition and a better life afterlife. So I guess it works both in the physical and in other realms. It's the same concept, right?
Well, I guess it certainly could. But again, if I can play the spokesperson for the dark side, I mean,
yeah, go ahead.
The most we can really easily control would be our conscious thoughts. And the really scary part of this has to do with what sorts of nasty thoughts we might be having that we can't control. And, you know, probably every one of us has had malicious thoughts that we wish we didn't have, you know, about loved ones, whatever. You know, and it's not, I'm not saying that all thoughts could kill, but in principle, perhaps they can. Obviously, not all thoughts could kill because no mothers or children would be alive today, if that
right.
were the case.
Yeah, and it's also possible that, you know, a single thought from you or me might not have the same effect as, you know, millions of people across the globe having a similar thought. So
absolutely. And we have no idea how to really get a handle on that, I think.
Yeah. We didn't get to talk much about The Gold Leaf Lady, but it is a fascinating book, and the subject of the book is fascinating. So can you just give us a brief synopsis of that phenomenon, what was exuding from this subject's body?
Sure. I want to be careful about saying that it was exuding from her body because we actually don't know that. What we do know is that there was this woman I was investigating in Florida whose body would suddenly appear, I mean instantaneously appear, sometimes flecks and sometimes larger quantities of a golden, very thin golden foil, golden-colored foil, which turned out to be brass. And the reason I said it's not, although it looked like it came out of her system, because it was brass, I think if this was literally coming out of her body, she would have had to have lethal amounts of copper and zinc in her system. So I think that isn't what was happening. Also, although I didn't see this, I saw it appear on her body spontaneously a number of times. But reliable observers have told me that it also would appear on her clothing and on objects around the room. So the real question is, are we dealing with a materialization phenomenon? Which would be surprising if it didn't later dematerialize, and it didn't. I have large quantities of it that I've had analyzed, and I scraped off her body. Or is it an apport? Is it something that was taken from one location and reappeared at or around Katie's body? And we don't really know. It doesn't really fit any of the convenient categories we have, and we've never found a stash of brass leaf that was being gradually depleted.
Yeah, that would have been a great perk for you if it turned out to be real gold and you had this huge stash of it. You know, it could have funded all your other research, you know, but it didn't work out that way.
Well, you know, the reason this is very much like a poltergeist case in that the subject, Katie, had no psychic abilities that she knew of or never exhibited them until she married her second and current husband, and it's been a difficult marriage by all accounts. And initially, various poltergeist-like things were happening around Katie. Objects were appearing and disappearing or moving around and so on. And one day, so the story goes, a carving set appeared out of nowhere. And Katie's husband said, well, what good is it if it isn't money? And 2 days later, Katie's body started to break out in what looked like gold leaf. And so my pop psychological analysis of this is that symbolically it allows Katie to satisfy her husband's demand for something valuable, but she didn't really have to bear the responsibility of being the goose that laid the golden egg, and which I think is a heavy responsibility. And it also gave her a very safe way of expressing her, I think, considerable unexpressed rage against her husband, because she wasn't really giving him what he wanted. It was a kind of fool's gold. She was giving him the psychic finger.
You may be reading way too much into this.
Well, I mean, the only thing, I'm not so sure. I think the only thing we can really do in cases like this is to try to understand the psychogenesis of the phenomenon. This is
yeah.
an unprecedented thing. And so we need to ask, if we don't understand exactly what the phenomenon is, why would it have occurred? Why would it take this form? And
right.
that's the only thing that, as far as I know, really explains why it was happening at all.
Yeah, it's all part of the scientific method. I mean, you got to find out all the root causes. We have been talking with Dr. Stephen Browdy. This case he was talking about of this Gold Leaf Lady. It's a good book. I recommend you pick it up. It's called The Gold Leaf Lady and Other Parapsychological Investigations. Not only does he go into this account, but other research subjects, both good and bad, and you could see both sides of it, including, we mentioned briefly, Ted Surios. It's fascinating with this processing thought manifesting on film and with images. So pick that up. The website is jazzphilosopher.com. I encourage you to see Dr. Browdy at the conference in San Diego. It'll be a wonderful presentation, and I'm sure he'll sign some of his books for you. Steve, thank you so much for being with us tonight, and we look forward to seeing you again real soon.
Thank you. A great pleasure talking to you, as always.
Thanks. Take care. Have a good evening.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Francis Mastracco, Tim Donahue, Deb Martin, Tina Jocelyn, Barbara Russell, Vicky Steffi, Wendy Lippo, Mark Varon, Eileen Lapata, Rita Springer, David Haith, Barbara Petillo, Glenna Irwin, Julie B., Stanley Newland, John Borland, Laura Prisco, Marianne Pierzga, Tanya Cash, Andy O'Brien, Dorothy Mello, Jeanette Davies, Janice Borelli, Joel Auerbach, Lenny Ficarelli, Rachel S., Lynn Cheney, Kimberly Saavedra, Griffin Alexander, and Pat Amendolari. And now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time for us to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.